The dangerous case of Donald Trump, 27 psychiatrists and mental health experts assess a president. And the book is just out in its second updated and expanded edition, featuring essays by 37 experts. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RUWithSonali.
Rising Up with Sonali is hosted, written, and executive produced by Sonali Kohatkar. Anna Buss is the producer, technical director, and web and social media supervisor. Our theme music is by Grammy Award-winning band, Kits Up. Like us on Facebook.com/RUWithSonali. That's the letters RU with Sonali. And follow us on Twitter.com/RUWithSonali. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
Listening to KBOO Portland. Up next, The Struggle with Alyssa.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 2019 Juneteenth celebration on Saturday, June 22nd from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Clark College Hanna Hall in Vancouver, Washington. The theme of the 7th annual Juneteenth celebration is Together We Rise. This theme addresses the idea that together we rise above the fray of hatred, despair, and discord. The celebration features a job fair, panels, awards, contests, an art gallery, live entertainment, and more. Again, that's the 2019 Juneteenth celebration on Saturday, June 22nd from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Clark College Hanna Hall, 1933 Fort Vancouver Way in Vancouver, Washington. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place July 4th through 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. The Waterfront Blues Festival is the largest blues festival west of the Mississippi. The festival features more than 100 performances on four stages, including the Robert Cray Band, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, Trombone Shorty, and Vintage Trouble. There will also be workshops, cruises on the Willamette River, activities for kids, after-hour jams, fireworks, and more. Again, that's the 32nd Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, July 4th through 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hello, everyone. This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. It is Pride Weekend, and there are going to be many festivities happening, and we want the queer community to feel celebratory, to be happy, to dare to be happy in a world that would see you disappear. And we've had some tragedies. And we need to be able to acknowledge not just how tragic they are, but how they got to be tragedies. So I'm in studio with two people to talk a little bit about Pride this weekend and also Trans Lifeline, which is an organization that you'll be hearing about.
Hello, my name is Carrie Yamauchi. My pronouns are she, her, hers. I live and work in Portland in nightlife, and as Alyssa mentioned, I work for Trans Lifeline. I'm on their admin team. And do you want me to tell more about Trans Lifeline,
or
do you
want more about myself? We can get into that. I wanted people to know who you are.
If I may. Yes.
Carrie's been helping to popularize house culture, voguing. It is going global with the popularity of a new show on FX called Pose, which some of my friends are in. It's incredible to watch them thrive. And Vogue has been on an upward trajectory since its inception. Oftentimes people who go and watch a ball put on by a house, they're completely enamored with what they see because the explosion of creativity is a little bit too bright for the naked eye, because queer people of color have been forced to observe all of their lives. It gives you a really incredible eye and sense of imagination. So I want to thank you for helping to bring it to this city. So I also want to be able to talk a little bit about your house activities, not just Trans Lifeline, when we get started. And we have another guest in studio.
Hello, my name is Princess Bhutan. My pronouns are she, her, hers, or they, them, theirs. I am a local performance artist and film student in Portland, and a reverse racist.
Excellent. I want to get into that. It's okay to laugh about reverse racism. Because it's a joke.
It is a joke,
That's the thing.
But also, still.
We can get into it. I want you to talk about what matters to you.
For sure, for sure.
It's pride. It's a celebration. And you are completely within your rights to have a little fun. Yeah.
Absolutely.
You should have some fun.
I agree. And I will.
Great.
And I shall.
Right? Like, great. Thank you so much. So, firstly, I just want to give it up to you as well. So please allow me to do this. Your Vogue is so emotional. So, you know, different Vogue evokes different things. Like, it's extremely expressive, which is something that often gets lost because, spoilers, people don't like it when Black, queer, and trans people express themselves, because they actually would maybe like for you to not exist at all, right? Your Vogue evokes a lot of pent-up rage. It comes out, but in a stylish way. You have a stylish way of expressing your rage. So if y'all want to start actually by talking a little bit about giving some context that I'm missing about your house, some of what y'all do, and in the scene, to help people understand what it is and what you do. And then we'll get into some heavy stuff, if that's okay.
Yeah. Button and I are both part of the House of Flora. It's one of the main Kiki houses that exists in Portland. I recently came on as Mother Flora. I was
Congratulations, Mother.
Thank you. I really enjoy being able to be a resource to my community that needs me. And I was a Flora before this, back in 2017, and I left for personal reasons and came back when I felt ready. And I think what really drew me back to House of Flora is the way that the house members engage as community members for their community in general, not just their house members, and that their existence in the scene and in this world is, we check in on each other, and there is good intention with a lot of the members to really take care of each other and listen. So yeah, the allure for me of the House of Flora is like really being able to engage and serve and, you know, have fun in the Kiki scene and in the balls, but to really focus on why we're here, and it's for queer survival.
And yes, I am the princess of the House of Flora, and I agree with everything Carrie just said. I think it's a phenomenal house. Yes, I am the daughter.
I agree with everything mother says.
I agree with everything my mother said. Thank you. Where are my manners?
Thank you for casually making fun of my accent, by the way. This is the original accent of the house scene, I'll have you know. It started in New York City. So when you talk mother daughter, you're supposed to say mother daughter, no matter where you come from. Thank you. Go on.
Absolutely. I'm getting checked all over the place.
You know, my mother
today
is Nicoletta Extravaganza.
I do now.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to give you her roster so you know who you're talking to.
Thank you. Okay, I will take it.
Go on.
Well, as I was saying, as my mother was saying, the House of Flora is a house of heart. I feel like a lot of the folks who are in the house right now, I got to know them before being housemates with them. Do we call each other housemates?
Yeah.
Before family, being family, you know, with them, yeah. Yeah. A lot of them have been showing up before we were family. Well, I guess we were family already. We were family before we were in a house together. And
you just found each other.
Yeah, we just like, so it's really interesting to go from like all of these emotional bonds to all of us coming together and just really slaying.
And you do. So I want to say that I know that the house ball scene is something that a lot of people here don't know about. It's not sort of in the air in the way that it is in New York City, where generally people know what it is, even if they're not into it. So like, you know, if there are some queens voguing in the subway, people know what that is. People know where it comes from. And there's not a lot of confusion. Here it's a little bit different because y'all are really just charting a new path. And I appreciate y'all for doing that. So for some background, the ballroom scene is, of course, not like ballroom dancing with gowns and tuxedos and all of that. But it's a different kind of ball. It's a different kind of party. And it's when people get together, usually under the banner of houses, evoking like fashion houses, because fashion is a very important element of the house ball scene. You have to look good or else you'll get chopped. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're walking, and of course, walking, when I say walking, it's categories that are called by whoever is throwing the ball, and they call the categories and they tell you how you need to bring it. So if the category is Femme Queen Vogue, that means that you need to really have your look together. You need to like be the baddest bee you can be, and looking good. And then on top of that, you're gonna have to Vogue your heart out. They want elements of Vogue. Mm-hmm. Catwalk, duck walk, hand spin, dip, now hair. And these are all elements of Vogue, and voguing is not the only category. And there are multiple categories throughout the night. Sometimes you get a prize, sometimes you get a trophy, but bragging rights are very important. Mm-hmm. Because you have to snatch trophies and win if you want to be legendary. And to be legendary in the house scene is a way to acknowledge that you were here. We remember your name in a world that wishes you never existed in the first place and would like to forget you. We're going to remember you. You're a legend. When you've surpassed that, you're an icon. And this is some of how the house ball scene works. It's a way of acknowledging people for their talents. Because otherwise, queer people of color are not going to ever be acknowledged for their talents. They'll be exploited for what they can do for others who are looking to turn a profit. And I don't think that that's outside of the realm of the popularity of Vogue and popular culture, but I digress. So I just wanted to give a little bit of background for the people of Portland so that they know what it is that you come from, and that this is going to be coming to Portland in a bigger and bigger way as y'all are growing. So I thank you. Is there something that I'm missing or that needs to be added about your house and about the scene here?
I think much like other places, like you think Salt Lake City and Boise, Idaho, you know, it's not unknown that Portland is a very white city, but that isn't to say that that overbearing whiteness is what is in leadership in the scene here. You know, I think we do a pretty good job of being intentional about who's elevated in the scene, and that's primarily like Black trans women and Black trans femmes and people who don't have a place in these institutions of fashion or
nightlife.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I think Portland does a pretty good job of uplifting that. There's still a lot of learning to be done, of course, but I think anytime I go outside of the Portland ballroom scene, I come back and I feel very grateful to be here, because in terms of gender expression, particularly for non-binary people, I think we have a lot more acceptance and a lot more of a thought process that engages non-binary people accessing the scene. So I really do think Portland has something special.
Yeah, the House of Flora is predominantly POC, and for the most part, all of the white people I meet in the scene, they know the tea, they know what's up, and they know to make space and to prioritize the visibility of the queer and trans POC in the scene. And what was that thing you said about? There's something else you said, I forgot.
About non-binary?
Oh, people? And then, okay, yes. A lot of times we have categories that are separated by gender, and of course we're being like judged by a panel, and one of the anxieties that could come up for like a lot of non-binary people and trans people who enter these categories is the feeling of like being judged off of passability, which is something that the Portland Kiki scene has done a really beautiful job at breaking down and confronting. And it, for me personally, hasn't been a concern with entering balls here. I've yet to enter balls elsewhere. That may happen this summer. But as far as my identity being seen and accepted, in correlation to the way I present, Portland is a place for that.
So I just want to give people some background with some of what you just said. I only say that because some people may not know what non-binary is, or even binary is, or POC. So I just want to be as clear as possible so that people are not upset that they're not able to follow. So non-binary refers to a rejection or a non-alignment with the gender binary itself. So you'll often hear people say gender is a spectrum, or gender is on a spectrum, gender expression. And that is true. And people who quite simply do not feel comfortable even aligning themselves with gendered pronouns that we are used to in American English, he and she pronouns, they feel like that doesn't work, and they're developing language around it. And I say they because the pronouns are they, them, theirs. People who quite simply do not feel comfortable with being identified in such gender terms. So it's expanding. And this is what we're talking about when we talk about non-binary people and non-binary life. So there's also POC, people of color, people who are not white, people who are outside of whiteness as a construction and an invention which is another show. But whiteness is completely contrived, and it comes into being dripping with blood, but maybe we'll talk about that later.
And in that order.
Then there's also the issue that you brought up, Kerry, where the inclusion of white people into the scene is something that people understandably have reservations about. I want to offer that the ballroom scene, I don't think, was meant to be contained in our small enclaves in New York City. It's already grown. One of the most well-known pieces of art around ballroom culture was called Paris is Burning. Paris Dupree was throwing a ball in New York City. And Willie Ninja, who was going to that ball, said that he wanted to make the real Paris burn. And Paris Dupree and Willie Ninja are both icons in the ballroom scene and in the culture. They'll always be remembered for their contributions. And when Willie said that he wanted to make Paris burn, he really meant it. And he did make it to Paris. And there is a very celebrated and vibrant house scene in Paris, too. And there are a lot of white people in Paris. So they're there. Scandinavia, it's big there, especially in Finland. There are a lot of white people there. In Russia, it's huge. A lot of white people there. Some of the people who are in the scene aren't even queer. They just like the way voguing looks, and so they learn how to do it, and then they go to balls. Many people bristle at this, and they say, you don't know why we vogue. You don't know why we go to hot basements. You don't think about Escuelitas on 39th Street in New York City. You don't know why we wait until the club closes down and they sweep the floor and open it up, because it's the only venue that we can get. One of the worst venues in the city, in a basement with no air. It stinks. It's crowded. People are there that in numbers that far surpass what is legal. We're packed in here like sardines. Because we need to have an outlet to express ourselves, because otherwise, everywhere we go, we get tormented. And a lot of the queens did and do. And they need to be seen. They need to express themselves. And so they do. And they have. And we have. And we will continue to.
Absolutely.
And so for people who don't have that experience of being so persecuted socially, that this is their outlet that they depend on and that they need to survive, it can feel a little bit like a slap in the face. And it's my hope that people who don't come from these communities can understand that. And if you want to participate, then participate. Feel the fantasy. But know your roots. And that's why I'm providing some context here for people about the ballroom scene. Is there anything else that we should iron out about the ballroom scene so that people can get a picture? What are y'all about to do as a house?
One thing I just remember that I want to add, if you've ever, you know, seen Paris is Burning, you know of, or you've heard of, Crystal LaBeija. And one of the iconic videos that I remember seeing before I ever got to personally engage
Crystal
with
the founder.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, these drag balls that were thrown by white queens who, by their quote unquote grace, allowed black and brown queens to participate, but they were never given the chance to win. Crystal called it out, and I think that catalyzed what is...
You're talking about racism even among gay men and drag queens.
Yes.
Shocking.
You know, they're just... They're tormenting us, like you said. You know, like, come, you're allowed in the space, but you'll never win because I don't want... You know, white people don't want to assert that anyone is better than them. That's never been the agenda. And it was out of this frustration and calling it as it is that the modern ballroom scene that does serve particular communities that are not white queens mm-hmm. or white people in general mm-hmm. Was born. And yeah, thank you for adding.
Absolutely.
And that history and that relationship with Vogue can't be forged. So any white person who enters the ballroom scene hopefully knows that they are still entering as an ally, and that it's still, at the end of the day, black and brown, queer and trans folklore. It's our culture, and we, at the end of the day, we can like continue to talk about that and continue to remind each other where our roots are, but white roots only go so deep into it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think that's also important to remind folks just so that they know who to recenter.
Right. And that the ballroom is a resource that is one of the very few resources that trans femmes of color in this city can go and actually feel like they're included and encouraged to engage, unlike, you know, a lot of the white-run nightlife in the city. So I think, as Button put it, it's very important that white people never feel like they have the reins on this scene, because they shouldn't. And if they do, that's actively detracting from one of the very few resources that the people of color have in this city that need the ballroom scene.
That's great. Thank you for bringing that out. Yeah. I hope that all of my listeners can hear that, because we are not attacking white people necessarily. If you're white and you're listening, I'm not attacking you necessarily. but I'm attacking whiteness, this thing called whiteness.
It's a construct.
Mm-hmm. So
it is not a person. Not an individual. It's not really a culture. It's a construct. It's a political movement. It's an invention. It's a tool, just like the ballroom scene is a tool. It's a tool that's been used to oppress and to silence and to keep a lot of people down. And if you were born with that tool in your hand, you need to know what it does and what it's been used for, and you need to decide how you're going to use it.
Thank you for bringing that in. You were talking earlier, you said that the roots of whiteness only go so far.
In the ballroom scene, I'm like, but they can only be so rooted in that.
That's mirrored in the reality that, while sure, throughout written history, people have been acknowledging what skin color what person had. There have been depictions of their skin tone. We know that people who have white skin have existed throughout history. Sometimes it's the only history we ever learn. So we know that white people have always existed. But this thing called whiteness is relatively new. Because the idea that all of these white people make up a cohesive body with a set of interests is a new concept that is not as clear until the era of colonization. Which also, in terms of the span of human history, is the blink of an eye. Trans people have existed for much longer, but we're going to get into that. Colonization didn't just conquer land, but it conquered people's minds. And one of the best ways to manipulate people's minds is to convince them that they are superior to others. What a great way to diminish someone's sense of humanity is to tell them that they're better because of something that they had absolutely nothing to do with. You can really manipulate a lot of people to do some very cruel stuff, or to watch some very cruel stuff unfold in front of their very eyes, if you can convince them that it would never happen to them because they're protected by their white skin. And that's part of what I'm talking about when I talk about whiteness. Just so that people know, I'm not attacking individuals necessarily.
Very well put. Thank you.
I'm speechless. But yeah, I love how that was put. I'm gonna listen to this and I'm gonna be like, I'm gonna try to reiterate it when I need to talk about it.
Like in that same vein, you know, whiteness is exhibited in behavior and in how you socialize with your peers, and it's less about, you know, the quality of, are you a good or a bad person? It's whiteness is exhibited in behavior, and it's something that a lot of people are socialized to just default to. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Because we're not supposed to, I don't think it's appropriate to talk about trans oppression without talking about, especially trans oppression in the United States, it's not appropriate to talk about it without situating it inside of a racial paradigm. Because racism is the soil of this desecrated place we call the United States of America. Mm-hmm. Right? Before it was the United States of America, this land was much more intact and holy, right? It's been desecrated by whiteness, by colonization. So shouts out to the indigenous people whose land we all live on, you know, who have been largely conquered, colonized, settled upon, terrorized, tormented, humiliated, and the list goes on. So we know you were here first. And you deserve for the hand of time to go backwards and things go differently. That's what you deserve. And so, at the same time that this thing called the United States of America was forming, and they came and they did this to these lands and to the people who lived here already, they didn't discover anything. They brought over captured African people who they didn't even call people, but called them Africans. Like not African people. It's very important. The dehumanization that was required for people to feel okay with owning another human being. If you're decent, that will pull at your heartstrings, to put it lightly, no matter what society you're grown in. But that's another story about philosophy, and we're not going to do that today. So in all of these cultures and indigenous cultures here in what we call the United States, and in indigenous cultures throughout Africa, places where people were captured and forced to live in bondage, reproduce in bondage, for their children to be raised in bondage, and their children and their children, these cultures have space and have made space historically for people who deviate from a gender binary, however it shows up in their cultures. They make space. It's not perfect. It's not gorgeous. It's not ideal. But at least the space is made. And some of the indigenous people here call it two-spirit, which is outside of the gender binary. And shout out to all my two-spirit family. I look forward to having the two-spirit show on the struggle. But I said that to say that they have had what we might call trans people in their cultures too. This is not new. We've always been here. We've spanned the entire earth, and we've been here as long as our human counterparts who are lucky enough to feel good about what's expected of them socially and what genitals they had at birth, that was in alignment, and we call that cis, C-I-S. Cis also is not a slur, right? So when we talk about, you know, cis heteropatriarchy, and it sounds like a curse when we say it, it is a curse. It's a scourge on our potential to be able to develop as humanity. So just to give people some background about what we're talking about when we talk about whiteness and when we talk about cis people and cis heteropatriarchy, these are dominant systems that we're all forced to live under. And you all are listening to three people who live under white supremacist cis heteropatriarchy. We live under it because we're certainly not in it. And we're damn sure not above it. So we're under it and we're trying to resist. So if it sounds like we're a little angry, like we're grieving, that's why.
Yes.
Trans Lifeline. I know both of y'all give your time and energy to Trans Lifeline. And I was just hoping that y'all can talk a little bit about it. So that people can know. If you can just go first, Bhutan, and just say what you know Trans Lifeline to be.
Trans Lifeline is a crisis line for trans people to call when they need resources and support. And I mostly have been learning about it through Carrie, someone who works for Trans Lifeline. And I've been around while she's volunteered for it. I haven't personally worked with Trans Lifeline, but it seems like a really important resource. I haven't had to call it myself.
It's good to know it's there.
Yeah, it's good to know it's there. And I mean, I grew up calling like the Trevor Lifeline.
Can you say what that is?
The Trevor Lifeline is like a suicide prevention line for queer youth. And I've spent several hours on the phone with Trevor Lifeline representatives in my life. And I recognize Trans Lifeline to be the... Is it age inclusive? Is it just for adults or is it everybody?
It's an age inclusive, yeah.
Yes. To be like the age inclusive trans version of Trevor Lifeline. And I'm sure of the impact that it makes because I have felt the impact of similar lifelines. And yeah, I'm excited to have friends who are involved directly in working with it.
Yeah. So some of the main functions of Trans Lifeline that we do currently are we operate the hotline, and all of our operators are trans and of trans experience. So these are people who can be there for other community members who are navigating, surviving under the cis heteropatriarchy, because as Alyssa said, it's torturous, and you're often felt like you're not wanted here because most people don't exhibit wanting us here at all. And our hotline isn't staffed 24/7 yet, unfortunately. They're just, you know, we don't have the volunteer base for yet. We're growing very steadily. And another part to what we do as Trans Lifeline is back in 2016, an organization called the Trans Assistance Project started up in Portland, started by my boss, Bunny. And I became involved in the context of Trans Assistance Project because after Trump was brought into our awful into this awful world as a president, quote unquote.
Trump was diagnosed.
Right.
Once Agent Orange was unleashed on the planet.
I thought you said Agent Urine, and I was about that's about right.
Well, wasn't that a rumor about him actually?
That the fake tan is just a urine stain?
No, oh. that some people that he's covering for them because they have video of him being peed on. This is all alleged, of course.
Wow.
Go on.
You know, I already believe it, right. Just because I want to.
So I was at a trans ID clinic because, you know, after a capitalist white supremacist gets elected into power, you fear for your life.
Oh, God.
And there are systems of bureaucracy that trans people need to navigate to get the respect of maybe having a shred of a chance at being seen as you see yourself. And often that relies on our identity documents. So think social security, driver's license, birth certificate. These are things that employers can see and have to see. So, and because there are no federal protections protecting trans people from discrimination, you can understand why some of these, why participating in bureaucracy can sometimes be important, and it's, you know, subverting the system that oppresses you, but it's for survival. And Trans Assistance Project provided funds and still, you know, provides funds for trans people navigating this bureaucratic process. And Bunny approached me and told me that everyone at this clinic needs to access this resource because it's a pool of money for trans people to attempt to survive under this, within this climate. And Trans Assistance Project recently became a part of the Trans Lifeline, which is, we call microgrants now. So we're still dispersing funds. I believe, don't quote me on this number, but the last time I remember, we had dispersed over $500,000 to trans people, you know, navigating this process. And sometimes to get all of your documents in order, it costs upwards of $700. And for trans people who have no federal protections of participating in capitalism, there are these boundaries that
that's putting
we need to
lightly
somehow,
boundaries
right
oh my god
these barriers these obstacles
shackles.
These shackles that keep us from participating like everyone else is allowed to. And some of the things that we've branched off in those two main functions of Trans Lifeline is we have a friends and family line going now. So that's a line for allies and people who aren't trans who want to navigate how to engage with their trans peers without being harmful. You know, these are people who actually care about learning how to show up for trans people and people who don't conform to this gender binary that
can you say more about that? How does that work?
So right now we don't have enough operators to be operating a line. It's a number that you call. If you want to know the number, I would suggest looking at translifeline.org because I don't have
numbers are there. Translifeline.org.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, translifeline.org. And you call the line and you leave a message, just talking about what it is you're wanting from this line, and someone will call you back and, you know, have a conversation with you or, you know, play voicemail phone tag with you. But it's a resource for allies and people who want to support trans people. And in the microgrants part of Trans Lifeline, we are now working on, we have been doing commissary funds for incarcerated trans women and creating programs that give trans women who have been incarcerated opportunities to
survive,
be housed
another day,
literally survive another day after being
we're going to talk about Laylene.
Tormented. Yes, of course, please. We have to talk about Laylene.
Please finish. I'm triggered.
Of course.
Right? Yeah. Like in the least annoying social justice way, I'm triggered, but right. Please go on.
And so Trans Lifeline and everything we do, our main priority is the survival of our community and the survival of our peers and giving a resource to people that no one ever, that like cis people don't have any interest in providing for us. And it really just goes to show that like trans survival is in the hands of trans people, and what we need for that to be successful is support by the rest of our peers. I feel like I kind of rambled there, but
no, you did not. In fact, I'm frantically taking notes because you're hitting so much that I want to come back to. Your elevator pitch is fantastic.
Thank you.
So I know you through your work with Trans Lifeline. Mm-hmm. So if I can give my plug for Trans Lifeline, Trans Lifeline is an organization that Portland community has been working with for some time. I originally got involved when I was asked to MC a fundraiser. It was an open mic at the then, in other words, feminist bookstore in Portland, Oregon, 14 Killingsworth. And we helped to raise thousands of dollars. And it's a drop in the bucket to what is needed in order for Trans Lifeline to continue to do the work that it must do, which starts quite simply with being a line that you can call if you're trans and you're feeling like you need an ear, and they provide it. But now with the micro grants and with some of their creative fundraising, they've been able to build out incredible programming that is putting trans people in the driver's seat of how this thing is going to go. Because we know all too well that it is not trans people who run LGBTQIAAP2S+ organizations. No, it's LGBs, right? Mostly white ones, wealthy ones that come from the middle class and the owning class, but they just happen to have a different sexuality. And some of them do better than others at being able to keep that in mind when they're dealing with people who are not lucky enough to be financially stable and white and cis. Mm-hmm. Right? Because I hear those things are lovely, but I have no clue.
I don't want to appropriate the experience.
I can't speak to that. Right? So I hear it's lovely, and I hope it is. If that's you, I hope you're enjoying yourself. I'm not. And therefore,
put lightly.
I fight. And I fight with Trans Lifeline. So if there's another piece about Trans Lifeline, please share it.
I just want to update the metrics that I gave earlier. So on our website, our total funds disbursed to date are $306,229, with 68,741 calls answered to date. Can I give the number for the Lifeline? The number for the Lifeline in the U.S. is 877-565-8860. And I suggest, whether you're trans or not, saving that in your phone, because that's one small step into having resources available for trans people that don't actually cost anybody anything except the Lifeline, the Trans Lifeline.
Again,
that number is 877-565-8860. You can see all of our information on translifeline.org.
Thank you. So, what is the reason, right? So, let's get into the weeds here. It's pride, right? So, let us not paper over what's happening and say that everything is great in the grand old USA, while we put the 50 stars on the rainbow flag, reaffirming patriotism, right? We love America too.
And putting rainbows on cop cars.
Oh, sure, right. And to prove just how normal we are, how we're such good Americans, patriotic Americans.
Consumers,
thank you. We're going to put your flag that's dripping with blood and totally toxic, we're going to take that flag and ring it out onto the rainbow flag. And we'll call it a party, and we'll invite all your friends. You know, the Fortune 500, you know, the police, the armed force of the state that kills people every day. We'll invite them to the party and we'll call that party Pride. Like, that's what's happening. And the background today is people who are seeking asylum at the border, who are queer and trans. Joanna Medina gets killed in ICE custody. Others die of their illnesses that were not treated in ICE custody. So, Roxana, right? The hashtag Justice for Roxana campaign. Mm-hmm. She's a Honduran migrant. Hernandez. She would still be here if it wasn't for her being labeled as a criminal because she's seeking asylum. Because in Honduras, the political situation is so bad for trans people that you, if you're out in public and trans, you can be killed by the police. It's not that different than the United States, but, you know, there's a it's a little bit better. And so she wanted to go somewhere that it was a little bit better. And for this, she was put in a cell and left to die. And this is normal. This is every day. So this is the backdrop. This is your rainbow flag with the 50 stars in the corner. That's what this is. It's not just at the border. It's not just a border issue. The border issue is a human being issue. It's an everybody issue, an issue that concerns everyone, but we won't go there. TT Gully. That's TITIGULLEY right here in Portland. A non-binary black trans femme who was houseless and was about to get their housing and missed an appointment. Which can make you feel real grim. Titi's body was found hanging in a park right here in lovely Portland, Oregon. A black queer person, non-binary femme, was hanging from a tree in your city, Portland. And the police just said, oh, it's a suicide, 24 hours, nothing to see here. The family is calling for an investigation, and other organizations are joining with them in the call for a fair, honest investigation of what happened, and they deserve it. Rikers Island is an institute. It's a jail. It's where you go typically when you don't have enough money to make bail, so you're awaiting trial. Many people have died awaiting trial. And Rikers, so many and so many other horrendous things have happened that violated people's human rights that they agreed to close it. And thank you to every activist that had a hand in the closing of Rikers. But the deal was that they'd close it in 10 years, and that was earlier this year. So it will continue to degrade in 10 years. It's not like they have much of an incentive to keep it up. So it will continue to degrade, and one of the most degrading things that has ever happened in that institution is when they let my friend Lailene Polanco Extravaganza die in solitary. If you die in solitary confinement, the institution killed you. And it doesn't matter how you died. In that case, the institution killed you.
Also, TT's death, which I imagine probably wasn't a suicide, but even if it was, trans black suicides are also deaths at the hands of the state.
Mm-hmm. She was killed by racism and transphobia, mm-hmm. without a doubt.
And I personally wouldn't be surprised if it turned out that a policeman himself did it. Like,
no one would be surprised. Mm-hmm. No one would be surprised.
And for them to have so little allyship and be against our survival on a daily basis. It's very strange to think that they would show up to my birthday party. Like, this party was supposed to be about me, so why is the person who could very well kill me someday, honestly, like, why are they at my birthday party?
What do you think is the way to nix them from the guest list? Do you have any ideas?
I'm not taking any Pride gigs this year. I'm not performing for Pride. I don't see myself going to any parades. I haven't made any plans. I don't, like, for Pride, the only thing I have planned is a gift from me to myself, and it's a photo shoot of me walking 7 gay white men on a leash across a rainbow street. And that's what I want for Pride. Because
who's shooting it?
Miss Lopez.
She was down with Don't Shoot Portland when we started, so I've known her for a long time.
She's good people. And I just, like, there's nothing that I know of that's Pride related that I feel like is actually for me, other than the history. Mm-hmm. So in order to participate, I just had to make up something that I wanted to do myself.
Congratulations. We just I felt like we owe it to our sisters, our family, past and present, who are not quite enjoying this party, right? We need to be able to talk about them too. Mm-hmm. Because they say Pride is a party. You know, like, people who are just there to have a good time, they're like, I just want to have a good time. I hear that. And you should. And if not Pride, when? When do we have a special hashtag on Twitter and Instagram for when we are feeling under attack, when death feels imminent? When then? Are we going to get a hashtag for when the icy breath of death is breathing on your neck? Will there be a hashtag for that? We need to talk about this. Yeah. So thank you both.
Don't wait until we're murdered by the police or by cis men or by, like, white whoever.
The Nazi creep.
Yes, mm-hmm. Before you decide you care about our work and our art, like, show up for us. I think that that's what you should be doing for Pride. You should be looking for local queer and trans people of color to follow, pay, and support. You should be asking people what their needs are, dropping stuff off at their houses. Happy Pride.
And if you don't understand why it's important to show up for these people more than 1 week out of the year, and if you don't actually exhibit supporting trans and queer people of color outside of this 1 week a year, it's what we call performative, as in it's not real, as in it's for show.
For you.
Right. You know, it's to gain off the backs of people who are oppressed. And I'm not saying you can't do that. There are a lot of people who, frankly, hate trans and queer people of color.
Yeah, but there's levels to this stuff.
Right. Yeah. So,
thank you for thank you for not being an outright fascist.
Yeah.
Because we know that they're organizing, mm-hmm. and they want you in their ranks. So thank you for making it this far. Now, what you can do is, since you are not ardently against our existence, if you like, you can learn some ways that will help us thrive. If you're really good, you'll do them. If you're not, then you'll just pretend that you are, and that's the performative gesture.
And if it looks like I don't like you when I find that out, don't be surprised.
Also, if you know you're not physically showing up or you're unable to show up, there are ways you could show up virtually. You can pay us.
Mm-hmm. I wish I had a soundboard with, like, sound effects, because what both of you just said deserved some sound effects. Like what you just said, I felt like needed a cash machine. Ka-ching. And then what you said is, like, was so shady. I feel like we should, like, play, like, icicles or something. Yeah.
Like that?
Yeah. Like the clinking.
Very good. I got to get a soundboard. You know, the show, I mean,
someone needs to get you a soundboard.
And a laugh track so somebody can laugh at my jokes.
I mean, we'll see how the show grows and what can come of it. But in the meantime, I'm just happy I can have my friends on like y'all and just talk about what is on your hearts and what's coming up. So I want to say, before we actually do close out then, my last bit will be June 28th, 2019, at the Q Center in Portland. I'll be putting on a event called Stonewall 50 in coordination with some comrades in New York City who are doing the same. June 28th marks 50 years since the Stonewall Rebellion. A multi-night, all-out, riot in the streets, busted windows, garbage everywhere, people screaming, fights breaking, ugly. That is Stonewall. Stonewall is ugly, it's bloody, it's noisy, it's dirty. That is Stonewall. And we're not going to try to make it seem like it was a heavenly event. It was hell on earth. And people should come and learn about it. It's part of a summer school series that I think I'm going to be doing at Q Center for the entire summer. So that, you know, for the kids who are not in school, you can still come and learn some history and culture from Professor Pariah, and we can have a discussion about some real stuff. And the first thing is going to be for Stonewall 50, and I hope people can make it. Proceeds from the night, I'll give my donations to Trans Lifeline. So
let me know if I can come through support. You said June 28th
is 50. Yeah, that was the night that what do they call it? The shot glass heard around the world, right? So